It's Jim, it's the World of Bonds. It's Monday, 25th of September, 2023. This is for professional investors only, never ever investment advice. We saw the highest German bund yield since 2011 today and the highest US Treasury bond yield since 2007 today. They go up to 4.53%. And curves are steeper as well. So the 30-year bonds are up more than the 10-year bonds, which are up more than the 2-year bonds, etc. So 30-year long-dated government bonds up around 10 or 11 basis points. 2-year bond yields generally up one or two. In Germany, they're actually down a couple today. So steeper curves, bear steepening in general. Dollar is up again. It's on a winning streak now, which has been going on since July. And all of this, despite oil being lower than it was last week. You know, we got up above $90 a barrel, which were the new highs for 2023 last week. And that was what everyone was worrying about a couple of days ago. This morning, we saw some more poor property news coming out of China. So Evergrande, if you remember that big property behemoth, that missed a coupon payment on a domestic bond, a yuan-denominated bond, and there's some early jitters in risk assets and some misses in some of the second-tier data. For instance, the Dallas Fed Manufacturing Index was down by more than expected. So a bit surprising, really, what's going on in bond markets. It looks like it's a kind of sentiment-driven thing at the moment. And we're left with those 10-year treasuries, as I say, around 4.5%. Do you have any guesses as to what the average US 10-year treasury bond yield is since 1790, when they started issuing US treasury bonds and writing down their yields? I'll give you a quick second to think about that. Yeah, 4.5%. We're exactly on the average of couple of hundred years plus of bond market history in terms of the bond yield. Anyway, what else is going on? We've got the Bank of Japan and Japan more generally in the spotlight again. Remember on Friday, the Bank of Japan took no action really on yield curve control and rates there. There wasn't a great deal of expectation they would, but perhaps some easing again of yield curve control to allow 10-year Japanese government bonds to drift higher was a possibility. We're at 0.74 still. They did nothing on that. But today, the Japanese Prime Minister, Kishida, he announced measures to kind of ease the pain of price inflation for the population. So then they're not doing it through monetary policy, but they'll do it through kind of fiscal policy type action. And he also warned about selling the yen, so he kind of warned investors that not to go there. He implied that the yen had got way too cheap for comfort, way too weak for comfort. That's obviously causing some inflationary pressures in Japan. Having said that, despite what he said, the yen is another 0.3% weaker since he came out with that statement earlier today. Bleak news too for the UK. For those that are hoping that we'd end up with infrastructure that helped levelling up and helped that north-south divide and helped make us an economy that had high-speed trains, quite frankly. So it looks like the government is warming up the population, you know, sort of leaking the fact that high-speed 2 will not go ahead between Birmingham and Manchester, which is obviously really bad news for the north. And, you know, people quoting the numbers that China has built 20,000 miles of equivalent high-speed rail track in the time that we've done, well, we haven't even done the 140 miles between London to Birmingham. Right, a couple of bits of longer-term Fed research for you today. First of all, a Fed working paper asking really, what's good at predicting inflation? Is it the inflation swaps market? These are effectively a bit like inflation-linked bonds, but based on swaps. So you can derive what the market thinks inflation is going to be from these swaps explicitly. The other way of doing it is through surveys, by asking businesses, consumers, where they think inflation is going to be in a year's time. So the Fed asks, what is the best? Is it these inflation swaps, i.e. the market measures, or is it the kind of more survey-based stuff? The paper is called The Swap Strike Back, Evaluating Expectations of One-Year Inflation, and a hat tip to Tracy Alloway of Bloomberg, who pointed this paper out. And the conclusion was that overall, inflation swaps more frequently provide better forecasts of future inflation. Previous studies that have shown that they weren't all that good were really, according to this paper, influenced by liquidity issues during the financial crisis and the pandemic. In other words, because inflation swaps aren't very liquid, when you have things like the GFC or the COVID pandemic, you end up with liquidity dominating the pricing of these things, and you've got to be careful about that. So the Fed analysis suggests that actually swaps have got the best predictive ability of inflation in 1 year's time, but if you combine the surveys too, you get even better forecasts. So an equal weighting of swaps and surveys is a pretty good proxy for where inflation actually ends up. And the conclusion, and this is a Fed survey after all, is that this measure implies that the Federal Reserve is expected to be closer to its inflation target over the next year than market commentators and surveys would suggest. So pat on the back, they reckon they're going to hit their inflation targets at the Fed. The other paper that the Fed has put out that people are kind of talking about a little bit at the moment is a quick word on pandemic savings. So remember, this pandemic savings wave in the States has been given as a reason for the post-lockdown boom. Everyone built up savings, or lots of people built up savings during lockdown, for the fairly obvious reason that if you're not allowed out of the house, you can't spend anything on theatres, entertainment, you don't go and get haircuts, new clothes, or go on holiday. And so at the same time, lots of people were getting paid decent amounts of money on furlough. And mortgage rates were low as well at the time. And so suddenly savings built up, come out of lockdown, and suddenly there's what we call revenge spending on cars, holidays, clothes, haircuts, also rubbish like collectibles and art and stuff, or the boom that you saw in some of those asset classes too. Rolexes and watches have gone through their own huge boom as well. All helping retailers, all helping the US economy, and probably boosting inflation as well. Now, these savings peaked somewhere between the spring of 2021, particularly for the lowest earning households, a little bit later for higher earning households. And what we ended up was savings of between 107% of pre-pandemic levels for the lowest income cohort and about 130% of pre-pandemic levels for the richest people in society. Now, where we are now, or as of Q2 2023, is that only the top 20% of incomes in the US economy still have inflation-adjusted savings above March 2020. Everyone else now, 80% of the population effectively, have seen their savings dwindle to below where they were in March 2020 in real terms. So what does that mean for the US economy? It probably means that revenge spending has come to an end. We're not going to see that as a boost to the US economy, as a boost to inflation going forwards. But there is some better news, that even as those cash levels have fallen, net worth of US households has jumped by about $5.5 trillion in Q2, according to the Fed's numbers. And the reason for this is that even as those savings have come down, house prices carried on going up and stocks carried on going up too. So there is still a wealth effect coming through as a result of that. But of course, we must note that those assets, housing and mortgage housing and equities and 401ks, again, very skewed to high income households. So the wealth effect likely to be only skewing heavily towards that top 20% again. And even there, probably the gains are starting to fizzle out as those high mortgage rates take the heat out of the housing market too. Right, I'm going to finish up with the news that India, the Indian government bond market, big bond market, $330 billion in size. JP Morgan have announced that India is going to go into the emerging market bond indices from June 2024. It'll be a gradual process, so a kind of increase of 1% per month up to a maximum of 10% of their emerging market bond indices. but should lead to capital inflows into the Indian government bond market. Have good weeks. Bye.